anyway, I'm noticing it's looking very fuzzy to you.
That's the glamour setting.
I know.
You know, like a glamour shot, you know, like you smear the lens with the Vaseline. Smear,
that's right. Yeah, put Vaseline on the.
Yeah, get some like some puffy shoulders, get some makeup, get some glamour shot.
Oh, wait a minute. Puffy shoulders.
I feel like that's a Napoleon Dynamite line. Like, let's go to the mall and get some glamour shots. I don't know. I'm really bad with movie quotes.
Oh. I'm bad with most quotes.
So. Now we're not recording the video. It's just audio.
Got it.
Yeah. This is a lot helpful.
Anyway, so this will suffice, or do you want me to put on more makeup?
No, this is great.
More makeup. Yes. More makeup. Hey, John.
Hey, guys.
John.
Okay, John sounds great. John looks good.
Oh. I look good, too. Yeah, I don't want to just sound great. I'm going for that.
Well, we
how the hell you doing, Bill? I haven't seen you in a while.
No, man. Come on.
Get more light on my face here.
You're on the road a lot, so you should be out here.
Me?
Yeah. Don't you drive around?
No, my shop's less than a mile down from my house.
So you're a homebody too. Okay, good. Yeah. Good.
Do you guys live near each other?
He's over to Lexington. Where are you?
Yeah, we're on the far side. He's north, north Boston, north. Little east, just a little east, and I'm basically west, a little northwest.
He's up the Concord River, up the Concord, turn up the Assabet, that big rock, Egg Rock, turn right at Egg Rock, up the Assabet.
Good for you, John. Good.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's a little muddy river used to fish a lot. I gave that boat away finally, Bill, to my son Adam. He's up on Lake Arrowhead in Maine having a great time with it. So,
I still got the dinghy for you.
Nah, I don't want it.
Wait!
Can't
how
imagine
long,
why.
How long have you known each other?
Too long, right? Is the operative quote.
About 30 years, I think. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, yeah. there we'll get into that. Here,
the lab was really really good, and then John arrived, and we got even better.
I thought you were going the other way with that.
I know. I set you up. I set you up.
Oh my God.
I know. The important thing is I didn't wait quite long enough in between, just so you really wonder what that is.
Oh, here's Maragord. Who's whispering? Ben?
Oh yeah, here, let's real fast. So I've never met I've met John before. I've talked on the phone with Bill. You can call us since we're both Ben. You can call me Neely. Call him Osborne.
Okay.
Neely and Ozzy.
Sure, that's our new.
So Neely's in the lower left. You're speaking now.
Well, yep. It's your lower left.
Oh, right.
Lower left.
I don't know that it's that everyone has the same screen configuration.
This is Hollywood Squares.
So we don't want it to be BN and BO.
Go with Neely and Osborne, but whatever you want to call us.
To this day, my dad thinks that my. To this day, my dad thinks my initials are hilarious.
Yeah.
B.O. Plenty.
Yeah.
Isn't that a cartoon character back when?
Good.
Well, see, my initials work. Like, if you're ever in the South and you want to know how to pronounce my name, just say B.N. Like, so mine like has some utility. B.N. Yeah. Okay, that joke fell flat.
That makes sense in the South.
Yeah, okay.
Are we on the air yet or not?
Well, so we might be...
I'd tell you more name stories if we're not.
Dad jokes are passé even in this generation.
On the air. This is recorded, but we don't edit.
Got it.
But wait, real fast. We do need to, so Bill Lane. Here, wait, yes. Osborne, you always do this part. Just go over like names, affiliations real fast.
Yes.
I'll do the sound effects.
And Bill, what's the affiliation we should use for the intro? And title?
What's my
title? Proteomics God Speaks.
We'll use whatever.
Retired and musician. Not. That's what I am.
Ex-magician.
Former director of, what were we, John? Mass spectrometry and proteomics resource laboratory.
Yes, right? MSPRL.
MSPRL, because we didn't like saying all that.
Got it.
Do you have that, Ben?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. And that's at Harvard.
I didn't realize you were retired, Bill. So
I guess that's previously the Harvard University Microchemistry Facility is what we used to call ourselves.
Yeah. Back in the days of Edmund. Microchemistry or microchemical facilities. I think Yale was the microchemical facility.
That's how we cut our teeth, if you will.
Microchemistry. And this is a lot. Okay.
And John, CEO of
President.
Okay.
For life. I've been drafted.
Right. And just phonetically, last name?
Nephew. Like thank you. Or elsewise.
Nephew. John Nephew. Okay, because I've been saying it wrong for like 10 years, so nice to know.
I've got a name like Nephew.
New it's not quite Nouveau.
All right.
There used to be an X on the end, and it was Nouveau. Wait, or okay. Canadians.
Yeah, it's a Quebecois.
Ah,
so you take those pretty lightly and don't scrape the Instagram and Twitter and everything to find out everything about Bill and John.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, we do no research at all.
Yeah. Well, that's why when you called me and started telling me things, I was like, please stop telling me things.
No, we had someone from the White House on, and we're like, oh, wait, but you have a PhD, right? And it's like, oh, yeah.
We weren't even sure what his degrees were. We didn't look him up at all. the letters after him. Keep going, Ben.
Oh yeah. And John, do I pronounce ESI or I say SE?
ESI Source Solutions,
okay,
please.
Okay, just making sure. Yeah. I guess
I don't know how that came up.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah. So we record a little intro after we wrap it up.
We're just gonna do it. Here, done.
Are we?
Yeah.
Are you gonna do live with this one?
Okay. I have a new version. Yeah, B-sides, we're playing with some things. We're playing with the intro here.
Yeah, because we don't have a sponsor for the series.
Oh, I'll sponsor you. How much you need?
Oh no, it's on purpose. We don't have a sponsor.
We've been turning down money.
They don't want your advertising, John.
John Yates wanted in, didn't he? I know he did.
The SciX has been trying to give us money for like a year, and we just keep turning him down. So.
There's been a lot of people, actually. Yeah. But it's good. It's a US HUPO spinoff. Well, they're our parent.
They paid for the first three seasons. So.
Good. And the fifth. They will pay for the fifth, too.
Oh, yeah.
Just the two of you?
All right. Good to know. Yeah, it's just us.
All right. So what we're going to do, guys, spoiler. So we're doing a very soft intro here. So we hit record. I'll probably edit some of it off, but we're just going to talk. You guys don't have to worry about anything. We'll stop whenever we stop, but we'll try to, John, I think you need to get off by 12, right? Okay. We'll probably wrap it up whenever it feels good.
I've only got 5 minutes.
Oh, okay. So Bill's out.
Well, there you go.
I know. It was great knowing you. And you'll know it's done because Osborne will say like, thank you. And then I have to read some credits at the end.
No hand signs.
No.
If we're not looking at the screen, we're not trying to be rude. We try to keep the conversation going behind the scenes in a chat.
See, I have better things to do.
Paisley.
Oh, cool.
Paisley's our safe word. Okay.
Wait, Bill, are you really leaving? He's going to go play the guitar.
Okay.
Come on, Bill.
We need some new intro.
It's where I live my life.
Yep. Oh.
That's awesome. What you guys have to look forward to at some point in your life.
Guitar's right there. Don't worry. It's not far away.
Wow.
Okay, my guitar's not anywhere.
We'll turn this into a jam session.
If you do that, I don't know if we have time for that, but we'd probably have to edit that in. It's not a bad choice.
Yeah.
Muddy water, Bill, on three.
Right. Latency. Yeah. Can everyone say latency?
Wow.
We're going to do a quick little intro. And then we're just going to start talking again. Don't worry about anything. It'll be great. Okay. Cool. All right.
Terribly worried.
Ben, are you ready?
I'm ready. Yeah.
Okay. So same thing as normal, kind of.
Okay.
Hello and welcome to this week's The Proteomics Show. This is our B-side series, a special limited season 4.
Hi, I'm Ben Osborne. I'm here with Dr. Benjamin Neely, and our guests this week are Dr. Bill Lane, who's the former director of the Mass Spectrometry and Proteomics Lab at Harvard University, and Dr. John Neveu, who's the president of ESI Source Solutions. Wait, did I do it wrong?
No doctors.
We're good.
Okay, got it.
Right. Normally, we record this after the show and we tell you how awesome it was, but as you can tell, they're already here. So we're just going to go right into it. Yeah, cool. So, hey, Bill and John, thank you both for coming on.
You bet.
I think you said thanks for having us.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. So first off, we're doing this a little bit different So you did proteomics. Just do like the shortest recap of like what you did. So Bill, you were a director of the Mass Spec Proteomics Resource Laboratory at Harvard. You spent X years doing proteomics, right?
Even before the term, of course. Started in 79, Brandeis, taught everything I know in Edmund chemistry by a guy named Ed Cannon, just fabulous person and mentor. These are days in which you identified an amino acid one at a time by GC, HPLC, back hydrolysis, and then amino acid analysis. Rigor was kind of built in early on. A short stint at UMass Med, and then Harvard invited me in 82. Kind of an upstart who didn't really know. I mean, I did the kind of the things that you would be fired for immediately these days. I just didn't understand politics at all and stood up to faculty, and turns out that was the right thing to do when I was a kid, as it were. And then we became quietly successful in there. Applied Biosystems with its early gas phase, Edmund Sequencer taking over from the Beckman sequencer, the spinning cup sequencer, they lasted for about 3 to 5 years running their own service. And a key turnaround was when they, in the mid 80s, I guess it was, stopped their own service and gave a few labs, Yale, me, a few other labs in the country, and said, would you take on our business? So we were already doing well and using them. That took off. And then late 80s, I started paying attention to what Mass Spec was doing and trying to wrap this up quickly. Sorry. It was, I think, 1990 MPSA, so methods and protein sequence analysis originally, and then it became methods and protein structure analysis. I run every 2 years in really special places around the world. This was Kiruna, Sweden, above the Arctic Circle in 1990. And another one of the many turning points that changed my life, because at that meeting was this guy named Don Hunt. And mind you, I was, I think, one of the few, I mean, I only see this in hindsight, one of the few who was kind of paying attention to mass spec. I kind of felt that I had to use it. It seemed cool. And Don gives this talk, classic Don Hunt talk, in 1990, with everybody bleary-eyed because it's a 24-hour sun. in July. He gives a talk and basically ends it with, in 2 years' time, everybody will have an ion trap sitting on their desk. Mm-hmm. This is 1990. Of course, that didn't happen. Yeah. But around 95, it did. And I was so excited by his talk that I went and sought him out at the break between talks. And he said, well, there's really no room, but why don't you come down to my course? I'll make room. We're running one in 2 weeks. So fly down to UVA. So I flew down, and you were handed, as you walked in at 6 o'clock, this massive book, and you were told you needed to know all this the next day. I went to the course the next day, having stayed up till 3 in the morning, learning all of whatever you had to learn. And Don gave his course. And it turns out nobody else had done that, and I was the only one. So Donna.
Was it like a joke and he didn't think anyone would do it?
No, it's not that. It was just instructions. You're walking into a little inn, right, to go to bed at 6 o'clock from the trip. And yeah, and the instructions were this. But I think those instructions were, I was a little overwrought by this. So, anyway, Don was somehow kind, or I won't say impressed, but somehow he said, let's go to lunch. So he took me out to lunch, which was a Hardee's hamburger. And we kind of became friends then. And I just adored this. I'm like John, I'm a puzzle solver and very visual. So Edmund sequencing, comparing chromatograms, and de novo interpretation. This is right up my alley in terms of pattern recognition and having a facility for doing that and seeing things that others did not. So I loved it. Anyway, that really dramatically changed things. A few people came and worked for me from Don's lab and got to know the gang there, Shabanowitz and others. And that's midnight. At that very same meeting, what's important is that I end up, again, coincidentally, across the table from Kuldip, who's the project manager for Finnegan at the time, which is going on to be Thermo, of course, as you know. Ian Jardine, who ends up being the director of marketing for that. And Ian and I became, and still are to this day, fast friends. And they recognized, Ian in particular, very, very smartly recognized that all of the Don Hunts and all the great mass spec labs, Neiman, et cetera, were not where their business was going to be. They needed to break into essentially the ABRF and the core facility world. And we were really lucky to be there and kind of see that vision at the beginning. So at any rate, Ian would visit all the time, and we would put together notes. And 5 years later, in the middle 90s, when the ion trap was around, I'm being flown out there basically to give the, if you will, core facility perspective on how to make this instrument be accessible and what was required in the software, et cetera. So that was beautiful. Then in the middle 90s, we also met a programmer, an undergraduate programmer who was taking a year off, and I had a lot of experience programming in the early music years with the MIDI spec, so I understood programming, and Martin Baker and I started developing software that would tie together all of our financials, the data acquisition, and the interpretation into one uniform browser-oriented piece of software, a software suite that became Proteomics Browser and was licensed by Thermo and set us on our way in the world of programming as well. Within this, John Yates, who I believe was still a postdoc, I didn't meet him, but I think he was a postdoc when I was there taking the course with Don. But at this point, of course, Sequest was out, and John was just incredibly generous, along with Jimmy Yang. And we were one of the few to see code and allowed to be fooled with that. And this allowed us to do some tools that were early library searches that really advanced our lab in the usage of that in mass spectrometry. So that's too much. But there you go.
Your brief was good.
Yeah.
We're going to have to go back on it, though. I mean, that was kind of the point. Like, you know, so you both had kind of come up. We were hanging out in Portland and just talking about, like, how much, you know, you had done, right? And again, we still need to talk to John real fast. But, you know, the number of references, for instance, right? It's like you're not a small figure in this, you know, development of proteomics. Like a lot of people talked about meeting you and the effect that you had on them. So yeah, your brief is not going to be brief.
where does this come from?
I know, right? Well, no, we had this, we were talking about this in Portland. Like, I think it's like, you're talking about this meeting with Don Hunt, right? And that was a big moment for you. But I think it's harder to see your effect on other people because like you're like students that come in, like you're a big thing for them. Like, oh my God, I had to, like, I tell this to my old advisor at Georgia, like I had three semesters with him. It was a big deal for me. For him, I am a kind part of a story, but like, I'm just some random kid for three semesters of like 30 years, right? Like he doesn't, my story is not his story and vice versa. And so, you've had a long time to probably interact and affect a lot more people than you're aware of. And they don't, they're not writing you letters, right? Yeah. They're not like.
Not nice letters.
it's very nice. And to hear John and I kind of know better. We don't even suffer, the two of us, the imposter syndrome, because we know we are imposters.
We know we are imposters.
So we happen to be very adept at a few things that just dovetailed into the technologies, particularly of the 80s and 90s. And some situations afforded us capitalizing on that and being useful to others.
No, super cool. Well, okay, we're going to come back to that.
Yeah.
Go, John.
Lots to come back to, but John, could you give us your intro and where you fit in the story?
You bet. So let's see. I guess I started in the science field with Clean Harbors back in 87. I was doing analytical chemistry and kind of self-defensive waste analysis and disposal, and specializing in oil analysis, both the waste oil and the saleable parameters of that. So we had a big thing going. Wound up in Bedford, Massachusetts, not far from Burlington, as a matter of fact. We were just at the Greater Boston Mass Spectrometry Discussion Group meeting last night, within a couple miles of where that first lab was. But I left there with a good sense of analytical chemistry. We did everything from, like you say, the oil analysis to the metals analysis on ICPs, the GCMS, all the pesticides, all these things. We had a real good, training and lots of different things. And that was great. We would show up at Harvard in 92, might have been 92, 93, I think I was right around there. And it was Edmund sequencing. I had actually left the Clean Harbors and answered an ad that Bill was looking for some temporary lab help. I was actually interviewing for the temporary lab agency director in Boston.
Yeah, you were a temp for, I forget what had happened, but you were through a temp agency and found through the temp agency.
There you go. So I was actually about to take the Boston job there. I would have been a millionaire by now, too. It took off like crazy. So I just thought I'd check it out before flying out west to take the job. And I answered an ad down the Harvard Med Bill. I'm like, ooh, this is pretty cool. How much can you pay it? It was like, how about this little bit? I'm like, no. At least this much. So we compromised, and I wound up staying. It was a funny little place, definitely doing neat things. We had so many new things all the time. I mean, we had like the first internet connection, I think. We had a deck vac station. We could do a command line blast P search of our Edmund sequencing data. It was a pretty big thing.
Wow.
Wait, can you go back to just wait, a temp ad? Like you're running, just like go back. Like, what are you asking for? Like, I need somebody to like wash some dishes. Like what? Oh, I don't understand this.
Renee was actually off to have a baby. So she needed someone to come in quick and learn her in solution.
Was that the reason or because the previous tech had just left? I think.
Oh, probably that too. Yeah. I think Mary had just left.
I had used a temp agency for some other reason. And so I had gone to a temp agency and John was at the other end. John, he was there less than 3 weeks and I was going down to administration and saying, we've got to keep this guy past the temp. So
it was also great support.
Yeah, and Renee, the same thing. Renee Robinson and John and I were the core of that lab for years and years and years. And we really have to give a shout out to Renee, who basically held the lab together. She's every
all her digestions. She's got one big Popeye arm from pipetting for 40 years. She doesn't fit her sleeve. Just hangs out. Great. There was, needless to say, so many interesting things going on and so many fun stories. I turned into the Edmund sequencing guy, and they had seven instruments running, 470s and 477s, on the 494s, eventually even the HP, what was it called?
Yeah, it got me.
The HP was a 241 eventually, because I tried to do C term and N term on it. But through all those years of working those things, I wound up even offering services, repairing them out of the labs nearby. I'm giving them away when they're being decommissioned. So I grabbed a couple of those and rebuilt them, resold them, parts everywhere. So we had a good thing going. Edmund still being done in some places. We were doing it almost to my last day, which was about 5 years ago, and I've been retired from Harvard. But of course, the mass spec came in and took over everything. So my spot in the formula was chromatography, honestly. I put some little things together that made things run real well, like the A-Bird. Here's an A-Bird right here. Matter of fact, just gave us, that was a smelly guy's in a lab. You stand on the right side of the instrument, your background goes up because your odor is going across the inlet. This is exactly how we noticed it. And a simple filter and a fan made that less of a problem. It was a big thing. And then chromatography, just learning to polish the ends of the glass, cut glass capillary tube so they wouldn't crush immediately, because Bill kept hiring Russians who just always over tighten everything. That's how they're trained. So with the polished end, I found a CPS over there. But these little things made the lab above and beyond what the other labs are doing. And we eventually made those products, as you can see, kind of my key to a lot of my unique products that I still sell. By 2009, I was operating here in my basement. This is my basement. And we've moved out a couple of years ago into a shop down the road over doing a ton of my own stuff and distributing a ton of everything else. Because all it takes is one paper by Nikolai Slavov that says, we use this column and the A-Bird to do this analysis. And everybody wants those columns in that A-Bird. This is what we're kind of beholden to them on. And we, needless to say, make sure that they're using those every experiment. So just little things like that. So now we're working with a couple different companies distributing and supplying to Thermo and Bruker and all these other folks. Things have been great on my end. That's my shorter summary of the bill.
He left out that in lab, a very important facet, which is he was also CCO. So that's Chief Comedy Officer. Really the lab, the feeling of the lab and having gone around was key. So we were tight and we were mavericks and we knew it. We didn't operate really by the rules.
But really,
our science did, but our attitudes were basically rock and roll.
Hey, no one's going to have fun for you.
So if you showed up in 93, how long were you actually in that lab together?
26 and a half years, I think.
That's amazing.
Yeah, 30. Mine, I can say LP. Mine was a long playing because it was 33.
Just stick with the music theme.
You bet. You're not going to get away from it.
Bill kept naming all our servers different composers. We had Chopin.
We had. John's going off on this. He's absolutely right. We had 28. Computers, this is before, using Harvard servers, four of which were servers. They were all named after my musical influences. I'm a bassist, so largely bassists. From Flea to the server was Mingus. Extra points for those who know who Jamerson was, which is my desktop, of course.
I know Mingus. Do you have a Wooten?
We do not have a Wooten. This is before Wooten.
Okay.
I retired in 2000.
About to get a Wooten. What?
But yeah, McCartney, Dunn, the gang, everybody.
We did do a lot of
even Carol Kay, another person for your listenership.
John Paul Jones.
Not John Paul Jones. I was not.
He's still bumming around. He's pretty cool.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No, in terms of confidence, but not. He was not special to me. He was a classic, really fabulous studio musician. Unbelievable player, but not special. We're not talking Flea or the kind of specialness of McCartney and the rhythm and blues Don and Jamerson people brought to his
part. Yeah, we did work those old PCs. I think we used to So some of them we started at 486 DXs, 66 megahertz. That was a big system. We had projects that we couldn't do because the multiple amino acid positions were, the file was bigger than the hard drive of the computer. That was only 20 megabytes.
No doubt.
Yeah, we're limited by things. But we started rebuilding those guys into, I think, Pentiums. We got Pentium 166s and put a whole fleet of those around. Started making rows of them for all the computer guys to come and work on. But yeah. Lots of hardware for sure.
Wow. Okay. Did Protium Browser end up being like a long-term Thermo project or product?
I don't know what they'd say about now because long-term. But yeah, it was... as long as we were using it. So we were pretty poor. We didn't write support for it. We didn't write manuals, things like this. It was made for us. And they came in and said, can we license this? Yes. But there was, even though they begged and begged and begged, we did not have the personnel, and I was not going to sit down and write. So it probably died on the vine at some point. But it was a wonderful relationship, and it led to lots of other things, and other labs learned that they could do same. Those that started with it and then started to do add-ons. It was all programmed in Perl, and it was just a wonderful web interface to about 45 different programs, at least 30 of which we used every single day.
Wow.
Yeah, so, it was all integrated through a huge access database with the user information, the billing, the...
Wow.
Yeah, everything that was done connected to the other facets, as John was saying.
Yeah, which means Thermo had no real need for that end of it. So once they started cutting those threads, it got quirky, and it still did things that no other system could do. Our de novo tool bench called Fuzzy Ions was such a great tool. We used that all the time for any database.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
What was it called? Fuzzy what?
Fuzzy Ions.
Fuzzy Ions. My first programmer that I mentioned, Martin Baker, he was the sort who was brilliant. He'd taken a year off. As I said earlier, and he's a sort that I'd say, oh, here's an idea. How about this idea? He'd look at me and say, I don't know. And then about next morning, he'd come in and go, like this? And that was our relationship. Wow. I mean, we wrote about 30 of those 45 programs in the first 3 to 4 months. And then coincidence, as I said earlier, Ian Jardin walks in and says, what are you doing? And I show him this, and he goes, oh, amazing, can we have this? that was fabulous. We had 44 programmers over, I say, 10, 12 years there, doing all sorts of things in the lab, that primarily. And they were our pride and joy. They just made, in addition to John, the lab be just this bursting with creativity place to be. And the summer was a party because all these undergraduates who are only working 3 to 4 hours per week doing all of these things would say, can I have a summer job? And we'd say yes to everybody. stuff them in the lab for those staying. And boy, it was just hopping.
So how many would you end up with?
44 total over all the years. I know that number because I had a folder for each one of them I once counted. We can work us into the only two people that I laid off, if you'd like.
Well, hold on. We'll get there. But like, how many at once? Well, no, I'm saying like because pain.
Oh, at once. I would say between 3 to 6 per term.
Wow.
And some who stayed on, some who came and went.
We had 1 or 2 full-timers, too.
Oh, yeah. And later on, because I was managing these people, later on there would be undergraduates who then graduated. And one of those people I hired to be the manager of the undergraduates, so to kind of offload some of the work that was all on my shoulders. So
yeah.
Kind of still the creative idea guy, but he handled all the management.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot of commitment to bring in undergrads for a summer, right? Because I don't know, by July they can do something helpful, and then they're gone.
They were always people though that we'd had during the year, so they were already established.
Okay, got
it. If they stayed on for the summer, they weren't newbies in the summertime.
Okay, got it, got it. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Some smart cookies, too. They went on to the nicest spots and nicest places. Biggest companies gobbled those guys up. That's CS101. Mm-hmm. All the computer science dudes at Harvard. Yeah, you can't keep them down. They go fast.
CS50 and CS51. Yeah, they were unbelievable. And I swear I'm not making this up. If I looked at their CVs when they were applying, and we accepted everybody. We never said no because we had little teensy jobs to do and we had big heady jobs to do always. So it didn't really matter. But their CVs, the best of those always had music. That was always, they always said something at the bottom about music.
Like, did they know? Like you, they're like, hey, you got to.
No, it wasn't a matter of getting along. I just noticed over time. This is such great science, isn't it, that I'm doing here? But I would notice that the people, not that I would like the most, but who would do the best programming, had a strong interest or love or actual capacity.
But why'd you always tell me to turn the radio down then?
That's right, because you were too loud. Martin, the first one, and I mean, he's into Bootsy Collins and Parliament Funkadelic. It was just so important to the way the lab ran.
Well, no, it's funny. So, like, I mean, I didn't play bass, but, like, I was a baritone sax player. And, like, but you have, like, I feel like there's kindred, like, bass, because you always, like, notice the bass line. You will gravitate to certain music that is bass-driven. Right. I mean, funk, for instance. That's fun to have kind of that kindred spirits in the lab. Ben, not to interrupt, like, how, so at the, like, you've got all these programmers, like, how many instruments are you supporting kind of in this kind of heyday of whatever you want to call it, like the late 90s, like
what's that,
you mentioned seven sequencers at once, right?
You think we had seven, John? I think it was five at tops at any one time. But anyway, doesn't matter. Those were the Edmund. Then Mass Spec was Finnegan Triple before the Iron Trap arrived. And, of course, their UK wing with Maldy Toff, John Cottrell, and the Thermo, or rather Finnegan over in UK, that developed that instrument. So those were all early in our lab. Sorry, I've now forgotten the question.
That's a good name to drop there. I was sorry, the mascot guys kind of.
Was this the famous early Finnegan Triple that you could write whatever you wanted it to do?
And that's up my alley too. So programming everything, right?
Yeah.
I remember my sales rep coming in and on a weekend, I was working on a Saturday. He came and visited me on Saturday to I'm asking some question. And I had been trying to tweak some particular thing in the triple, in the spray, or some adjustment. And he recognized that with bleary eyes, I'd been at this for 3 hours. And he turned to me and he said, "Bill, you're finally a mass spectrometrist."
That's awesome.
Tweaking, yeah. For that long to get one little bit extra of the signal out. That's us.
Yeah, the triple is like, you see a mass, you can quickly type the mass, comma, and a number for collision energy, hit enter, and get it to MSMS once or twice. That was how we ran the triple.
Wait, like real time, you're typing in.
Yep.
No, you're not. Yeah. It's like a video game. Yeah. 192.7. Oh, sorry, that's not a good mass. Like 585.7.
Well, you write scripts for little scripts that would run what John is saying. And that really all came from Don's lab. So Don taught us those particular things and not how to script, et cetera. But Terry Adana joined me for about a year from Don's lab after she had done writing. And basically really brought everything in of Don's lab, the technology and the microcolumns into the lab.
Yeah, she really taught us a lot. We learned how to do de novo sequencing with the calculators, and we went to his, was it a 2-day seminar before Protein Society, or was it before ABRF?
Yeah, I do remember he did a seminar. So yeah, it was starting to fan out. I already knew, of course.
Yeah, so that was fun because we knew how to do it already. So at the bars at night, we were getting free drinks by helping people with their homework.
Well, as we were talking, I went back just to kind of, because I'm horrible with dates. But it, so you know, like 89, ABRF splits from Protein Society, really because of Edmund sequencing, right?
Right.
And then you had kind of the Edmund sequencing era. Like, what would you kind of call that time period? Like, I guess of the early 90s.
Well, or how long? That's all. Me, that's later. What you're talking about is already too late when that split has come. Okay. Edmund has gone. I mean, the sequencer came out commercially, I think, at 75. I started in 79. So I don't know what to call that entire period because it was a slow switch over to, especially Applied Biosystems, of course, with gas phase sequencer, which miniaturized, made it quicker. Sorry to keep driving this music point home, but all I wanted to do was get home to play music. So everything about my career on this end of things was to speed things up. So we were writing the early fast cycles and where could we trim this, where could we trim that and still get the same result on an Edmund. So anything that would expedite.
They were very complimentary anyways. The Edmund always had the good N-term sequencing and the ion trap would have some C-term data he couldn't get or he couldn't lose. And when we'd have two or three sequences going on the Edmund, which was quite common, you could pull them right apart from each other very cleanly with those. And we'd sell two or three sequences for a single run, which was a lot of money at that time. $1,000 for a sequence. I used to get for a single peptide sequence. And this is how the place ran. It was no database. We're making that data up. So it was important we had that verification with the sequencing. And of course, then the game was they'd go back and probe their genes to find out where that was. Then they'd sequence that piece of gene, and that was their protein. They'd get a grant to study that protein that they sequenced. That was where I was looking for the sequences with the least degenerative codons. We had a really neat UV system set up where we could target tryptophan-containing peptides and tyrosine-containing peptides, and we had a real good set of Bill's chromatography work. I could talk about someone who taught us chromatography. Yeah, we'll defer to Bill showing us some really neat chromatography that I immediately approved upon, by the way. We kept on running with it.
Yeah, for the Edmund people, John's pointing out something. I was not a writer, not a speaker, and so all my colleagues know this. Like they never saw me out there giving a talk, and I never really wrote papers. So it's always a participant in other work. Very lucky to be a part of all of that. But what John is pointing out is that very early on, I had gotten a diode array detector. So when you're doing internal, that is peptide sequencing, digesting, this is for Edmund now, digesting, fanning out on HPLC, doing a separation, I ran a diode array, and I read some paper on second derivatives, and just to quickly get at this, if you take the second derivative, I could tell the difference between tryptophans and tyrosine. Now, to begin with, that is in a peptide, so... And what do you want? You want the least degenerative peptide sequence that's going to lead to for cloning purposes, which is what everybody was doing. So I could fan out a digestion for anything we digested, and immediately see the two tryptophan-containing peptides. This was such a leg up compared to all my colleagues. And
you can see crap too. You know, this is
and I'm to be blamed because I never published. I would not do that. I kept it as a if you will, modern day secret, proprietary secret. So it was out there for anybody to do, but I did not publish. Eventually, Paul Temps and I were good friends, Paul down at Sloan Kettering, talked maybe 4 or 5 years later, and he said, "Oh, you got to get this out there. How about we collaborate?" And so we did, and then he wrote it up and left my name off.
No.
It's okay. We're great friends. Hedy is still, she's at NYU now, and just the best. Those guys are the best. So anyway, but it was really remarkable. And tyrosine, of course, has only two, and so that was also sought after. To be able to do a digestion, everybody else in the Edmund chemistry world who's doing internal sequencing, which is a really important thing to do in the first place, as opposed to N-terminal sequencing, the ability to see at a glance a chromatogram and see all of the sought after peptides, it just made it so easy. And most people came to us to only get 2 to 3 peptide sequences. So we were giving them the tryptophan and tyrosine containing peptides. They were getting their answers before other labs. So it gave us a huge leg up. Such a simple thing.
It kind of shows we were actually in kind of a unique position. We were in academics. We didn't have to publish or perish. So we could really focus on the service, which was pretty unique at that point, too. There's lots of people had these sequencers and mass specs. They're in academic labs that had to do a project, and you know what I'm saying. It was really a lot to focus on the service and making the science work for folks. So it was a great spot. Spent a lot of time on the phone, talking, prep, training.
Yeah.
It was a big part of our thing.
And just because it kind of got buried there, I mean, you said yes. It, but like, so you never gave a talk.
Never.
Never gave a talk.
My entire career.
Like
John said, I'd be a millionaire with all the things I would have had, all the honorariums, et cetera.
It's crazy. I mean, I did.
No, I'm scared to death. I'm a musician, but I'm scared to death to be on stage.
Well, so that's the other thing. So you've got all this stuff moving fast and you're trying to get home to play. Like, are you in a band? Like, are y'all like, do you have recordings somewhere?
Yeah, a serious musician for the longest time. And then this career, which is pure luck, pushed that career very slowly during the 80s out of the way. I think it was around 88, 89. But we had by the time this career is starting, my best friends to this day, singer-songwriter and myself, had shifted to in the studio anyway. The ideas we wanted done. So, yeah, that's true.
Like,
by the late 80s, by the mid 80s to the 90s. But yeah, all new wave, etc., all of that.
Like, can I look it up? Does it have a name?
What's that? Catch put out an EP, but no, you wouldn't find that anywhere. You'd have to look at history more in the mid 70s of who was playing at the clubs, like Channel and the Paradise and all the clubs here. Typical Boston band.
No, it's great. I had a bunch of musician friends, and you would ask them like, well, what's your job or what do you do? And they'd be like, you mean like my day job? Or like, what do I do? Yeah, and it was always like the job was this secondary, like, sure, I got to go, like, you know, drive math, you know, proteomics forward, whatever. But let me tell you about this base.
Right.
Like, I feel like,
we can go on and on forever about art, et cetera. But as everybody, I think, at least intuits, in the world of art, music, et cetera, there are so many great. The few that become popular or make it or do anything financial, that this does not say that these others don't exist, or that people that just absolutely need to essentially do their art regardless of what that success is going to be. You're losing me.
You're chopping in and out on my side. You guys.
Yeah, sorry. It's probably Bluetooth. Sorry, I can't do anything about it. My cycling friends, who are not musicians and not scientists, all say, "I don't understand why you're always up there in the studio. What are you doing up there?" And the fact of the matter is, I turn to them and I say, "It's the same thing. Why are you out on a bike? Because you can't help yourself. You have to be up. It's the same."
Wow.
So yeah, well, this is where Bill's heart is. Not the science. I'm so lucky. Science, and it was
fun and we did
great things, but you have to do music regardless of whether it's successful.
There you go. When I visit Bill's house, he subscribes to the motto, "Don't let your drunk friends play your guitars." So that's I'm shoot out of the studio back to the arts area or something.
That's true.
I mean,
he won't let me ride his bike either, for God's sake. It's so light. I'm like, I could do a wheelie on this all the way across the yard.
but it is, okay. I mean, but like when you talk about it, so, you know, we've had like 40 of these, and also, like, you know, Ben and I are kind of more mid career. And you feel this, you know, you have to care about your job, but it's almost, if you care too much, you know, you can burn too hot, I think. And so having these other things, I mean, must help, right? Like it must, obviously, like you're talking about kind of creativity, like keeping that, you know, other side alive, which probably helped, right?
Yes. It's not just music and the stereotypical creativity, getting back to the programmers, that was just the same feeling, just so creative. Ideas, can we do this? Yes. Can we do this? This is really wild. Oh, yeah, we can do that. You know, and the undergraduates are at that point where they're not encumbered yet. So their creativity and bouncing ideas off was just the best. Yeah. I'll never forget it. It was really my happiest time.
And so do you think, like, if you were right now, let's say you superimposed, you know, that kind of 90s, whatever the acronym, MSPRL, onto right now. So right now, you know, you've got like SoundCloud, you've got social media, you've got preprint servers. Like, do you think you would still kind of be keeping it to yourself? Or do you think you'd have this, like, site, you know, you'd have like a GitHub repo? I'm just trying, like, in the current age, yeah. I guess you're still making music right now. Like, you could still be using
these
things.
Maybe, I mean, I know you're not doing this, but there's an implication of I should, but no. Once a loner, always a loner. I'm pretty much alone. So I'm happiest here, holed up with my musical tools and writing and recording and being wowed by where the hell is this coming from? Where does the new musical idea come from? It's just amazing every day.
Yeah. And I meant more like, I think some people are more exhibitionist and not for like the wrong reason, not like it's an ego.
No, absolutely.
We were talking about Brett Finney. Like, I feel like he's just fine letting it air out, and it's really helpful to all these people, right?
Nice.
Yeah. And which is why, by the way, like we actually have you on is because we were talking to Brett. Do you want to hit that real fast?
And it was nice that John Yates as well.
Well, John didn't know the story. I asked Yates in Portland. I was like, hey, do you know this crazy story? And he's like, what? I mean, do you want to just like real fast? Who'd you fire? Who are your two people? You don't have to.
So I don't use the term fire. I use the term layoff rather.
Yeah.
We had 44 programmers. One of them was a freshman programming with I equals one to N and all these things that she were just.
That's how I
simple no-nos. Yeah, and that's where you learn. But my senior programmer at the time was screaming and tearing his hair out, literally. So I said, this isn't working out. Later, I learned with later programs, this is very early on, that she had gone on to teach them all in her junior and senior year and become one of their mentors within Harvard as an undergraduate and went off to Microsoft, of course. The other was this guy who came in with 3 800s on his board. When I took boards, there were only two. But anyway, this guy had 800. And as I said earlier in this, we hired everybody, whether they knew something or not, as long as they knew how to program, because we had a kind of regime of how to work them into the system. And he went on to become one of the most despicable people I've ever known personally. That's because I was brought up to be honest. had a funny set of parents.
who such a weird, like, moral compass here. I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird. Wow. Anyway, he set on something, and this is in the early 2000s, in the early aughts, and he set on a project. And about a week later, my senior programmer, this undergraduate, had gone. Graduate and become a programmer, said, I don't think, can I talk to you? I don't think this guy is actually doing any work. And he said, okay, watch him for a few more days. And he came in and got, I really don't think when he's coming in, he's doing anything. He seems to be doing all this other stuff. Do I have permission to at least monitor his logins? We don't want to monitor content or anything. So I don't know whether I was legally right or wrong or whatever. But we monitored. He was doing no logins to our servers, nothing. Absolutely nothing. And he was collecting a paycheck. Here's the dishonesty part. So for me, it's totally fine if you're not into it. It's totally fine with a lot of other things. It
worked for me for years, yeah.
Yeah, for John. I'm collecting the paycheck. Didn't do anything, but I didn't notice him. Anyway.
Was
so,
he working on the Proteome browser at all?
Proteome browser,
to work on it.
Correct. Okay, now, mind you, this is as it was in the day. This is just the way the story unfolds. We know nothing about the future at this point. Okay, these are all exactly the same stories I would have told you over 20 years ago, the day after he left. They're not changed by history. I brought him in eventually. This is was there for 3 weeks. Into the office, and I said, I don't think this is working out. And his words were, I don't think this is working out either. And that was that. It was all as amicable as it. A key thing that's also important is John can attest or add to this. He was not liked by anybody. He had this kind of, I don't know what it was. It wasn't arrogance. It was a type of arrogance, but it was something. Socially, he was just not liked and not sympathetic, like you might be what we call it, just a simple oddball. He was not, it wasn't something sympathetic at all. He was really disliked for you. So as you might have guessed, John and I, neither of us are on Facebook, or at least I'm not, never have been. And the reason is that person is Mark Zuckerberg. So, the only addenda to this story is 2 years later, our new senior programmer, this very mild-mannered woman, came to me and said, could you come into my cubicle and take a look on screen? Yeah, I'll be in a minute. Came in, and she had two screens up. And for those people who understand setting up websites, etc., there's something called CSS, your style sheet, that establishes, of course, the colors and where you want to use boldface, et cetera, the style of the sheet. That's a public face of all websites that can be seen. On one side, she had our proteomics browser, and especially the larger version that was for our lab. And on the other, she had the early Facebook style sheet. She had two pages up, and they were identical. So the early Facebook colors actually come from us.
Wow.
It's still, you know, lots of people say since, well, why don't you go after them? We're not going to be about it. So.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay. But I can picture.
He was a strange character. And again, this is long before we knew much about what right. was going to be. So I hope he's grown up. Doesn't seem like it, but.
No, I
hope he's grown up.
I really wanted this to. I mean, I didn't know what it was going to be like. The Sequest code, like BioWorks, is secretly Facebook, or like I don't know what I wanted, but oh, that's yeah, pretty solid.
Yeah, no, not that far.
The algorithm secretly is like solving de novos. It's like fuzzy. It's really ions led to.
Yeah. It's just odd socially. It's just so socially odd, given that that's the word that is associated with
him. Wait, did he have music on his CV?
I don't remember, and I don't think.
Right. So. Yep. See,
that's the problem.
There you go.
Don't let them in if they don't play.
That's right.
Well, my perspective might be a little bit different on the Zuckerberg story. I was just running my Edmund sequencers and playing with the different instruments, with the mass specs and all those things. Like I say, I had been doing the upgrading of the PCs. So I think he was working on, was it Coltrane he was working on, Bill? It was one of those upgraded ones. It used to run the HP.
The actual computer he used doesn't matter, but yes.
He was really like hammering the Blue Train album. Like,
in the background. Yeah. Well, it turns out, of course, I get along with him just fine because I get along with anybody. I don't put too much into awkwardness, clearly. So I had nothing bad to say about him. We didn't interact much at all. They're just saying, hey, dude, what's up? You know, back and forth. But even years later, he did meet my brother, Bob. And with the name Nephew and this awesome good looks, he recognized Nephew from the protein lab, he said. So that's my brother, John. So he still remembers us, Bill. And good. And I've been emailing him every once in a while to say, I've still got your hard drive, by the way, Tuck.
No, you don't.
I held that hard drive for years. And I'd go down to talk to the Harvard lawyers every once in a while. I'd be like, you know, I got the hard drive, Zuckerberg. What are you doing? I don't know. What do you want? Like, you get rid of it. I'm like, so I think I eventually get rid of it. Well, I'll have to look around. There's stacks of stuff around here, but it'll be interesting. He's never responded to my lame blackmail attempts on Facebook, at least, because it's all public, etc. He does know. So I kept my identity clad in a Purdy Birdie icon in Facebook. Oh, Purdy passed away recently too, Bill. I know you'd be sad to hear that. My cockatoo.
I am, John. Yeah.
And yeah, she was a mascot for a long time because of my A-Bird device. She was the theme for that. But yeah, that's the story as far as we can tell. Was there any other? I didn't remember there was such vitriol between the two of you, Bill, I must say.
Really? Really? Yeah, I tell the same story.
Nah,
but anyway, yeah. I'm, you know, who knows with memory beginning to fail. I'm pretty sure this is the same story.
Well, like I said, this isn't why we contacted you, because really it was because your name had come up again from Brett. It was that whole, you know, why people that have wide effects on people. And that was what we were talking about, because we were like, all right, I mean, Brett's like, I mean, it's gotta be thousands, right? And that's really the reason we wanted to have you and John on.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's colleagues like Brett. We were on committees together in the ABR of John Yates, McCoss, and names go on and on and on. Think John feels the same way. Super lucky that we were able to do what we did and things that we were able to accomplish. So it's really fabulous.
Yeah, Boston's been a great place to watch all this stuff develop, and there's so much going on. It's just amazing. I get down there as often as I can.
Oh. So you guys have had this long perspective on it. Like, what do you think's most exciting about where proteomics is going?
I don't pay attention. That's John's I literally don't pay attention.
Wow.
I don't want to imply anything else, but my brain literally, when I was out of there, shifted.
Wow.
Just
okay.
So and I retired in 2015-16.
Wow. Okay.
And I everybody would ask, what do you think of retirement? And I'm lucky enough to have both cycling and music be, you know, passions and things, so it's not like I didn't have something to do, but it was just a good time. I'm lucky to be there, but I don't pay attention, and I'm not there reading as I would have been at the time.
Well, yeah, nothing wrong with that, right?
No.
Yeah,
no. Feels good.
Wait, my dad doesn't miss the railroad at all, right? Definitely bridges his entire life, you know? So, different
thing. You know, neighboring lab when we were upstairs on the third floor of the bio labs was George Wall, Nobel Prize winner. And you look at his history, and he had three phases. He was a lawyer. Then he becomes a scientist who goes on to win the Nobel Prize for, you know, sequencing rhodopsin and establishing the structure of rhodopsin, one of the most difficult membrane proteins. And then an activist, and a serious activist that made a difference in the later part of his life. Just completely different facets of life, and being lucky enough to do that. So I feel lucky enough to have done that as well. I have really different parts of my life.
Can I ask then, so what, like, what's a good album that you're kind of jamming out to right now?
So
it doesn't have to be new.
The out there latest, because they, I don't know that he's put something, unknown murder orchestra, Rubble Bucket. I actually do think, Eilish is phenomenal.
Did you hear the new Beirut album, Bill?
Oh, man.
No, is now there a new
talking.
One?
Oh, now yeah, we're talking.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Billie Eilish does have a new album as well.
Does she? And Carolyn Polachek? Carolyn Polachek, who used to be in Chairlift. What she does with her voice, just unbelievable. Hmm. So
the bug.
Yeah, look up Carolyn Polachek. Look up, just do her NPR Tiny Desk concert.
Oh, I love the Tiny Desk.
Just phenomenal.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, only because you mentioned cycling, I mean, I don't know if you're watching. Are you watching the classics right now?
Yep.
So Matthew Vanderpool.
I have not seen. They're all DVR'd. So
oh, gosh.
Don't tell me.
Okay, never mind. Yeah. I won't ask you about the monuments. God, thanks for making me stop there. All right. Well, we'll come back and get an addendum on that one.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I'm cycling from Torino up across the Alps to Locarno, Switzerland. For 11 days starting in late July. Yeah.
Okay. So you're not like doing the Giro.
I'm not doing the Giro.
Okay, cool.
Friends of mine and I do a custom tour of about 14 people each year, typically in Europe. Last year was Sardinia. A year before that was down the Apennine and down the spine of Italy.
Wow.
But you're doing actual mountains. This time.
Yeah, oh yeah.
That's big.
That's the fun part, because you get to go down the other side fast.
Mm-hmm. Right. I was just talking to someone about this. Like, I remember when I was a kid, you know, we'd always try to get like up to like 60 miles an hour. Like we get kind of close to it.
What?
Yeah, it was pretty fast.
That's good.
But
we
pushed it pretty hard. But like, you know, you think like you've got this like quarter size piece of tire that's like, I don't know if I could do it still, but, but still, you can go down those mountains pretty fast, so that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Since you have mentioned that, that's your current life. I just wanted to touch on that. And I got some bands. I gotta pick up those albums.
So the Buzz Band, Bill, is Nation of Language at the Royale the 30th of May. You want to go?
Oh yeah, I don't know. I don't know though. So.
They're good. It'll be fun.
Well, 30th of May, I won't. 30th of May, I won't be here. But yeah.
Ah, okay.
But, yeah.
Yeah. It's between SCP and ASMS flight, so we got just enough time to go get a nice show.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
It's my job to thank you guys for coming. I think we could have just keep going and on and on if like I didn't have something else to do.
What a thankless job to thank.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a lot of fun, but yeah, thank you for making time.
Thank you for agreeing.
Thank you. It's nice that. That anybody cares to hear anything from us, but it's great. Thank you for both of you, for Osborne and for Ben and Neely and Ben. There, we got all four in.
Well, thanks for having me, you guys. We'll see you at ASMS in a couple of weeks.
Yeah,
yeah.
100%. You can adopt SCP.
Not me, man. Yeah, no. I did. I spoke at every SCP conference last year.
That's why I'm asking. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Out this year.
Oh, checking.
Yeah, we'll see you. Yeah.
All right, we'll be right.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, so we're going to do some credits. First off, the views expressed are solely ours and not our employers. We want to thank Johannes Bagnoli for our intro and exit song. We want to thank Kaylee Kirkwood for the artwork. Oh, yeah. There's a song that you should listen to. It's pretty heavy. He's yelling pretty loud. Also, you can email us at theproteomicshow@gmail.com. Please like, subscribe, stars, thumbs, wherever you get podcasts. Thanks. Bye.
Great. Thanks, everyone.